Welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast, a production of the Criminal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School in Charlottesville, Virginia. Every 2 weeks, we release a new episode. Today, we're going to have a conversation about a recent opinion from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Please note that these episodes may contain facts and circumstances surrounding criminal trials. Listener discretion is advised.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable United States Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America in this honorable court.
Welcome back to another episode of Criminal Law Presents CAF Chats. Today we'll be discussing the recent case of U.S. v. George, decided on 21 July 2025. Today we're joined by Lieutenant Colonel Michael Scaletti and intern Macy Peel, a rising 2L at Charleston School of Law, and a summer intern here at T. Jaglis. I'm Major Ultimus, and let's welcome Macy to the podcast for the first time. How has the summer been for you at T. Jaglis?
Thank you. It's been incredible. I've loved working with the different departments, seeing what you guys do every day. It's definitely solidified my love for crim law.
We love to hear that. What's your favorite thing you've done this summer?
Probably the Archer trial with the OBC, getting to participate as trial counsel.
Speaking right to my heart that you're not saying the Blackhawk ride that you went on.
Oh, yeah. No, that too. That was incredible.
Thank you, Macy. Will you please tell us the procedural history and facts in U.S. v. George?
Yeah, so the victim, who is referred to as WMB, and the appellant were co-workers at Joint Base Langley-Eustis, Virginia. On 3 July 2021, WMB, appellant, and their co-workers went to a local bar. While at the bar, appellant repeatedly asked WMB to give him head, or oral sex, which she refused. Concerned with her interaction with the appellant, WMB spoke with a present co-worker and suggested they leave because the appellant was getting kind of drunk. In the car, WMB was sitting in the middle back seat in between the appellant and that same co-worker. Appellant again requested head, but this time put his arm around WMB and whispered in her ear, "I'm being dead ass. I really want head." WMB again refused. When she continued to refuse, the appellant grabbed the back of her neck and forced her head toward his crotch. WMB resisted and was able to pull herself away. The appellant grabbed her again and more forcefully pushed her head towards his crotch. This time, WMB felt what she believed to be the appellant's crotch with her cheek because she could feel his zipper. WMB then alerted her coworker. The coworker heard her tell appellant to get the fuck off her in a panic state. He saw appellant's hand on the back of WMB's head and that appellant was trying to force her head down onto his lap. He intervened and the driver stopped the car due to the commotion in the back seat. When appellant exited the car, WMB and the others in the vehicle noticed his pants were unzipped and his underwear was visible. A general court-martial composed of officers and enlisted members convicted appellant, contrary to his pleas, of one specification of attempted sexual assault without consent. The specification at issue read, "Senior Airman Dennis A. George did at or near Newport News, Virginia, attempt to commit a sexual act upon Senior Airman WMB by penetrating her mouth with his penis without her consent." Appellant argued for the first time on appeal that the completed offense language in the specification constituted the overt act the government was required to prove. Specifically, the language denotes the overt act element. The government was required to prove that appellant actually penetrated WMB's mouth with his penis. AFCA disagreed and found that the language in the specification was designed to, and did, place appellant on notice of the nature of the underlying predicate offense, that he attempted to sexually assault WMB without her consent.
Thanks, Macy. Sir, what issues or issue did the CAF grant?
The issues were whether the appellant's conviction for attempted sex assault was legally insufficient because the government did not prove the alleged overt act. The issues of legal sufficiency are reviewed de novo. The test for legal sufficiency is whether, viewing the evidence in light most favorable to the prosecution, any rational trier of fact could have found the essential elements of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt.
And here, CAF held that the reading of the specification adopted by the parties at trial is determinative, and appellant's conviction was legally sufficient and affirmed the decision of AFCA. So let's talk a little bit about the important points of this decision. Sir, Was this case really about legal sufficiency?
CAF found that while the appellant framed this case as an issue of legal sufficiency, the real issue appeared to be a dispute between appellant on appeal and the parties at trial as to how to interpret the wording of the spec. So it was drafted kind of as a ambiguously. So they just put out, and it when you read it, and you're reading it out loud, it seems like the buy portion is of the sex act is the overt act. So there you go. So let's talk about sufficient notice. CAF reminds us that a specification is sufficient if it alleges every element of the charge offense expressly or by necessary implication.
So here it was an attempt, sir. And so we just looked up the electronic bench book. We looked up the model spec. What is needed to prove an attempt of a sexual assault?
What's needed to prove it, so the element you got to prove is that they made an overt act to forward a motion towards committing the underlying offense. Here, when they were going to allege the specification, what they're going to allege in the specification, they only needed to put that he attempted to commit a sexual act upon WMB. They didn't need to go beyond that. And when they did, they're kind of buying the farm. You have to prove it.
And so that's where the challenge language is it's by the nature of which he attempted to do that, which is penetration of the mouth with his penis, correct?
Right. So it creates this kind of weird situation where, and you know, and CAF talks about this, why would anybody do that? Why would any government counsel allege a completed offense as an attempt? And then they get to it, and it's a little bit like what we talked about in our last episode, is that, you know, if the parties know something and the appellate courts can figure that out, then everybody knows what we're talking about. I call these cases like, come on, guys, reviews. It's just CAF going, come on, guys, you knew exactly what everybody was talking about. And if you can get there, address it.
Right, sir. And you talk about this argument that the appellant made. He essentially is, or his counsel is alleging that the government charged an attempted sexual assault and pleaded the complete offense as the overt act, which seems implausible. If you had the completed act, you would charge the completed act, not an attempt.
Right. There would be no need. So that's important because it changes a number of different things in the trial. So if you're charging an attempt, this is why CAF is so explicit about this. If you charge an attempt, you're changing the mens rea of the offense. And then now all of a sudden your mistake of fact and all of that is a completely different analysis. And it opens up different avenues for the defense. So why in the world would a government counsel say, it's a completed offense, but we want you to have a lesser mens rea?
Yes, sir. And at trial, defense made no objection, which limited CAF to review for plain error. And as we know, the first prong of plain error requires the appellant to demonstrate there was an error at all. And CAF found that there was no error here. What was some of their analysis, sir?
So first, the court found that while the specification has multiple interpretations, the defense didn't object to the wording or claim lack of notice. Therefore, the court adopted the reasonable reading of the specification that the parties adopted. If you want some fun, go read footnote 2 in the case where they're just like, hey, this is new, but this is what we're doing. It's kind of a fun little footnote. Essentially, what CAF is getting at there is that the parties knew what they were talking about. Come on, guys. The defense argues in a way that reflects that they understand. They didn't object to a certain instruction that the military judge gave that kind of resolved the issue. It's one of those things where everybody knows what's going on, so there's no real issue here.
And right, and because CAF adopted the reading that the parties adopted, the challenge language described the predicate offense, not the overt act. Macy, why don't you talk about footnote 2 with the interesting aside that CAF goes down?
So CAF highlights the similarities in this decision to the decision made in U.S. v. Ace Vito, where CAF held that the actions of the participants at trial can resolve ambiguous terms in pretrial agreements.
And so that's essentially what CAF is doing here by saying there is ambiguity in the specification. However, both sides seem to be on the same understanding of what the specification is. Sir, what was the determination that CAF made, or what did they take into account what the parties did or did not do at trial?
So CAF basically runs down a list of things that the counsel did not do at trial. First is the defense didn't ask for a bill of particulars. They didn't make an objection based on lack of notice. So they didn't say, we don't know what we're defending against. They knew exactly what they were defending against. Defense didn't object to the military judge's instructions to the members. Appellant counsel did not claim IAC for DC for the defense counsel not doing that. Defense also spent a significant amount of time in their closing argument, like I mentioned earlier, that the two overt acts the government ultimately proved, the act of holding WMB's head down towards his lap and the act of undoing his pants prior to holding her head down, did not occur. So by arguing that they didn't occur, they kind of understood that if they did occur, then you have the attempt. So CAF determined that there was sufficient notice and then answers a legal sufficiency claim using the reading of a charge that was adopted at trial by the parties, apparently.
And the government argued here that while the evidence established that the appellant undid his pants and forced WB's head down towards his lap, and CAF found that both or either of these acts provide the overt act necessary to prove a charge of attempted sex assault. And the appellant made no dispute of these acts that they were not proven at trial in this brief. So CAF found the conviction was legally sufficient. Sir, so based on that, how does this case affect the field? What can the field take away from this case?
I think the field, most importantly, can take away from this case that you read a specification out loud. If it makes sense, then you're good. If it doesn't, then you should probably reword it. And thinking about where we're at and what you're charging. So if you're in Article 80 and you're charging an attempt, you have to think about what are those elements that I am alleging here. So even if you use a model specification, double checking that specification against the elements that you have to prove is a really good practice. The other piece is if you're a defense counsel and you see something like this, not generally a best practice to wait and see or think that you're, you know, planting landmines in an appellate review, because you're not really helping your client then. It's better if you identify a legal issue to address it as soon as you see it.
Yes, sir. And I think CAF kind of points out that this specification could have been drafted more clearly, that there was ambiguity in this specification. And I think with this, and you referred back to our previous podcast where we talked about U.S. v. Patterson, is you have to prove what you plead. And so if you have these extra terms that are not required in attempt in there, government, you may have to prove what you plead.
Exactly. So you have to prove what you plead, and you have to plead what you can prove. Right. And so I think the other interesting thing about this and our last podcast about Patterson is that it's the court didn't treat it as a notice issue because the parties didn't treat it as a notice issue. So we're in legal sufficiency land because the parties didn't bring up the issue of lack of notice.
And I think we can all agree that defense is kind of stuck in a rock and a hard place, right? Sometimes you don't want to make those objections because you want them. You don't want to hurt your client in making those objections. But Right. What we see here is that CAF, and using the Acevedo case that Macy described, is going to resolve ambiguities or alleged confusion after the fact. And particularly if you don't raise anything, it doesn't appear that there's any confusion on either side when they were trying this case.
Yeah. So as a defense counsel, when you're looking at issues like this, in order for them to be really helpful to your client, you kind of have to be doubly lucky. You have to be lucky that the trial counsel drafted it poorly, and then you have to be lucky that when you raise the objection, they don't fix it. And it's never really a great plan to not raise a legal issue that you see at trial. The courts aren't really that forgiving about that.
So I think there's some takeaways for both sides of the bar in this case. I think government, understanding what you have to plead and then pleading what you can prove and no more. And for defense, that sometimes you can't sit on your hands and you have to make some sort of signal to either the trial court or the appellate court that there is confusion on the end of your side. So thank you both very much for today's discussion. And to Macy, we wish you well on your second year of law school. We've loved having you here this summer and hope to see you in the JAG course soon. Stay tuned for another episode of Crim Law Presents CAF Chats.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast. If anything you heard sparked a thought, we'd love to connect with you. Your comments help us create better future content for the field or the fleet. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode. The views expressed in today's podcast are those of the presenters and not necessarily the Judge Advocate General or the Department of the Army or the Department of Defense.
Thanks, counsel, for both sides. And the court will stand in recess until further order of the court.